For the next few minutes, just let your poem-loving hedonism rule the day. Let your love for everyday poetry rise up and say, to-do list, just relax. This time is for me. Taking my time, breathing deeply. Well, that's my way of inviting you, each of you, to this latest episode of Dale Byron's Poetry Podcast, entitled Listening to the Stones, Why We Love Poetry. And I felt like it was appropriate to start out with a quote from Joy Harjo, the amazing poet, that talks about this business of listening to the stones. She says it like this. She said, when I began to listen to poetry, it's when I began to listen to the stones, and I began to listen to what the clouds had to say. And I began to listen to other. And I think most importantly for all of us, then you begin to learn to listen to the soul of yourself in here, which is also the soul of everyone else, the soul of yourself in here, which is also the soul of everyone else. So in this episode, we're really going to dig into this idea about loving poetry and just the luxuriating in all that poetry has to offer. And I thought that I would start with a little piece that I wrote, and it's actually entitled Why We Love Poetry. Why We Love Poetry, and it goes like this. We love good poetry because there is bad poetry, and even that is a miracle. We love poetry because it does not run from trouble, but creates some of its own, the good and righteous kind. We love poetry because someone once tried to make us love it in a certain way that we really didn't and we wouldn't. That's when we smiled but kept on humming our own song anyway. We love poetry because love itself beautifully crushed us once, and no one can take that life-affirming pain from us. See, there was this poem that described our teenage predicament so perfectly. We love poetry because for a split second, we knew everything and can't forget that delicious feeling. We love poetry because if we're lucky and keep pounding on doors with our undefended hearts, we may feel that feeling once again before we die. We love poetry because it stops us fully alive in our tracks, because it recycles cliches into a restored amazement. We love poetry because it sometimes leaves tracks we can barely follow, but always a scent our bloodhound nose can't miss. We love poetry because a four-year-old suddenly hands us their poem with that triumphant look that makes our heart burst wide open, seeing our own four-year-old's smile in theirs. We love poetry because it calmly walks right inside the paradoxes and ambiguities of our lives. It doesn't avoid, it does not avoid such complexity. Rather, it engages, welcomes, and celebrates the all of it. We love poetry because it can neither stop the destruction of the natural world nor save what remains, but cannot cease its grieving and speaking out loud again and again, knowing nothing is more powerful than the heart aroused. And when we hear the world, and when we hear the world reflected in these ways, we feel a sense of rising agency, of constraints, falling away, of rightness and acceptance, all at the same time. We are then able to use our own sincere, stumbling, error-prone ways to operate more skillfully in this world, to work with what is, as we quietly dream what could be. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. This is why we love poetry. Well, again, that was a piece that I wrote, and it started out as just a two or three sentence musing one morning. And I happened to show it to a good friend of mine who asked for a copy of it. And later, when I was sending a copy to that friend, I decided that I would make it a little bit more, a little longer and a little more in depth. And that's what occurred. So, again, we're talking about the love of poetry. We're talking about specifically the kinds of things, the images and the metaphors and the sounds and the ideas and the feelings that all are part of the experience when we engage with a poem that captures our attention. So I wanted to shift to a poem now by the great poet Pablo Neruda, who wrote a poem called Poetry, which is, you know, germane to our topic this week, this time. It's translated by Alistair Reed. It's called Poetry again, Pablo Neruda. And it goes like this. Very famous poem. And it was at that age, and it was at that age poetry arrived in search of me, in search of me. I don't know where it came from winter or a river. I don't know how or when. No, there were no voices, there were no words, nor silence, but from a street I was summoned. From the branches of night, abruptly from the others among violent fires, or returning alone, there I was without a face, and it touched me. I did not know what to say. I did not know what to say. My mouth had no way with names. My eyes were blind, and something started in my soul, fever or forgotten wings, and I made my own way, deciphering that fire. And I wrote the first faint line. Faint, without substance, pure nonsense, pure wisdom of someone who knows nothing. And suddenly, And suddenly I saw the heavens unfastened and open, planets palpitating, plantations, shadow perforated, riddled with arrows, fire and flowers, the winding night, the universe, and I, infinitesimal being, drunk with the great starry void, likeness, image of mystery, felt myself a pure part of the abyss. I wheeled with the stars. My heart broke loose on the wind. Do you feel those last lines? And I, infinitesimal being, drunk with the great starry void, likeness, image of mystery, felt myself a pure part of the abyss. I wheeled with the stars. I wheeled with the stars. My heart broke loose on the wind. That's just one of the great poems talking about that moment when poetry became so important to Neruda that his life was then dedicated to it. This poetry that gives us, as we were saying, images and metaphors that lift up right off the page and do what words ought not be able to do, lift off the page and lift off normal meaning into something that is bigger and greater and more significant. Pablo Neruda wrote many, many poems in his career, did so many things in his life, an amazing character. A few quotes. He said, in one kiss, you'll know all I haven't said. He also once said, you can cut all the flowers, but you cannot keep spring from coming. That's a good one to have stashed close by when you're feeling a sense of frustration, a sense of despair, a sense that maybe someone can stop spring. But Pablo Neruda tells us, no, that's not going to happen. He also said once, every day you play with the light of the universe. And one last one. What did the earth teach the trees? What did the earth teach the trees? How to speak to the sky. Such a delicious thought and line. And it makes me think that if we want to change our perspectives, if we want to open the aperture of our beliefs, get a wider view of the world, expand our horizons, then we need to play more with poetry and a tad less with standard prose. This poem opens it up for us, I think, in a very amazing and broad way. So let's shift gears here from Pablo Neruda to a poet that I'm just learning about, Irving Feldman, and he's been around a long time, wonderful poet, taught for many years before retiring at State University in New York at Buffalo, SUNY Buffalo, and which happens to be where my wife went to school. And The poem is called How Wonderful. How Wonderful. How Wonderful. Irving Feldman. How wonderful to be understood, to just sit here while some kind person relieves you of the awful burden of having to explain yourself. How wonderful to be understood, to just sit here while some kind person relieves you of the awful burden of having to explain yourself, of having to find other words to say what you meant, or what you think you thought you meant, and of the worst burden of finding no words, of being struck dumb because some bright person has found just the right words for you, and you have only to sit here and be grateful for words so quiet, so discerning, they seem not words, but literate light, in which your merely lucid blossoming grows lustrous. How wonderful that is! And how altogether wonderful it is not to be understood. Not at all. Just sit here while someone, not unkindly, is saying those impossibly wrong things, or quite possibly they're the right things if you are, which you're not, that someone, a difference, finally, so indifferent, it would be conceit not to let it pass. Unkindness, really, to spoil someone's fun. And so you don't mind, you welcome the umbrage of those high murmurings over your head, having found, after all, you are grateful, and you understand this. How wonderful that you've been led to be quietly yourself, like a root growing wise in darkness, under the light litter, the falling words. How this poem ends, so interesting. And you understand this, how wonderful that you've been led to be quietly yourself, like a root growing wise in darkness, under the light litter, the falling words. How delicious a poem. How delicious a poem can be that, like this first stanza talks about, tells us with such skill and deftness about ourselves that we are struck, amazed. You know, when the poet says, how wonderful to be understood, to just sit here while some kind person relieves you of the awful burden of having to explain yourself, of having to find other words to say what you meant or what you think you thought you meant, and of the worst burden of finding no words, of being struck dumb because some bright person has found just the right words for you, and you have only to sit here and be grateful for words so quiet, so discerning, they seem not words, but literate light, in which your merely lucid blossoming grows lustrous. Oh, how wonderful that is. And we know that. We know when we find a poem, a piece of art, a poem in particular that we're talking about today, that reflects back to us something that is in critically important, nuanced ways so much better. It's like a map of us that we've intuited, that we've imagined, that we might have even hoped for, but that we've never quite seen before. But the poet sees it and speaks it, and it rises up off that page, doing, as we've already said, things that words ought not to be able to do. And then in this delicious second part of the poem, you know, he says, and how altogether wonderful it is not to be understood. So there's the reverse. How wonderful it is not to be understood. Not at all. Too well. Just sit here while someone not unkindly is saying those impossibly wrong things, or quite possibly they're the right things if you are, which you're not. That someone a difference. Finally, so indifferent it would be conceit not to let it pass. Unkindness, really, to spoil someone's fun. And so you don't mind, you welcome the umbrage of these high murmurings over your head, having found, after all, you are grateful. And you understand this, how wonderful that you've been led to be quietly yourself, like a root growing wise in darkness under the light litter, the falling words. So it's equally nutritious when someone does just the opposite. They describe what we are not, so that we know who we are by who we are not. It allows us a sharp focus, and it is in a kind of paradoxical way the way for us also to get a really firm grasp, feeling intellectually, emotionally, the coordinates on ourselves. Yeah, the coordinates on ourselves. The poet Irving Feldman had one quote that I saw that was kind of interesting to me and germane, I think. He says, "We do not live in a world of things, but among benedictions given, and, do you know what I'm saying, received." So there's some very juicy themes that the poet is talking about. So as we sort of move to the ending of our episode today, we've been talking about this whole business of what poetry can do, why we love it, and what it's able to do, and sort of luxuriating. I sometimes talk about the fact that I had adult onset poetry syndrome. But for so many people that I've met over the years and worked with, there's so many people who fell in love with poetry in their teens, and I suppose that's probably right for me. But then life rushed in, as it does on us, most of us, and elbowed out every ounce of time that we once used and devoted to poetry. But then later, we say to ourselves, wait a minute. It comes crashing into our lives, like Neruda said, now is my time for this art, these poems, poems that I love. And to which I say, there are millions of reasons we love poetry. And to which I say, don't hold back. You love poetry? Indulge. So that's a wrap. That is a wrap. And I appreciate your listening ear. And I appreciate you being on this journey with me of the Poetry Podcast. And let me just end with a quote by the great poet Mary Oliver. I think along this theme we've been talking about today. She said, "Poetry is one of the ancient arts, and it begins, as did all the fine arts, within the original wilderness of the earth." And I would say it begins within our own wild spaces as well. Okay, thank you for listening. And until next time, take good care of yourself.